from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com. And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get a preview of this year's Indie Fringe Fest with Pauline Moffitt.
I'll get a preview of the upcoming season at Clues Memorial Hall.
And speaking of Clues, we'll find out about a really large painting that you'll be able to see at Clues this year. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Indie Fringe Fest is now celebrating its 10th anniversary. The festival starts on August 14th and goes through the 24th with 384 shows on 8 stages. Travis DiNicola spoke with director Pauline Moffitt about the festival.
Pauline, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you.
Thank you, Travis. It's an exciting year this year.
Happy Fringe, 10th anniversary. That's pretty fantastic.
Well, it's the fastest 10 years I think I've ever spent in my entire life. I also think it's the only 10 years I ever planned in my life.
Mm-hmm.
When you consider it started as an accident and I started as a volunteer, it's been a wonderful journey.
And it has grown enormously, both in terms of recognition and what is being offered and the talent and, of course, the attendees. This year, 384 shows, is that right, on 8 stages?
That's correct. So it's 64 performing groups and we have 8 stages. And, of course, we've still got that temporary theater, but that's up at the 800 block and always presents a challenge. But I think it's going to be a wonderful theater in the Trailside building.
So tell me about Fringe. For people who don't quite know what Fringe is or understand Fringe, these are short shows. A lot of them are kind of experimental theater. Some are a little bit more traditional. It's really all over the place.
It is. I mean, I think if you think of it as comedy, cabaret, drama, dance, magic, music, multimedia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just about every genre, and it goes from edgy to family-friendly. A lot of it is not so much the shock factor anymore, which is how we started the Fringe.
Right.
It's about the craft factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much better can you be at producing a show that really shows that it's not just a well-written and well-acted show, but it is presented in the cleverest way you can do, 45 minutes to an hour.
And each show has, what, 6 performances?
They have 6 performances over 11 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gives everyone a chance to be, you know, reviewed, to get that word of mouth out.
Sure.
For the traveling people who come from Minnesota or New York or Los Angeles, everybody gets a chance to have that first great weekend that generates reviews and word of mouth.
It's so much fun walking up and down Mass Ave during Fringe every year, and everyone's comparing notes. You know, they've got their program out, and they've marked off which ones they want to go see, and they're talking to their friends about, well, which one did you see, and which one should I go to?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. It is word of mouth. I mean, as you know, we've surveyed the Fringe for 9 years, and 60% of the respondents to those surveys say that they learn about shows through word of mouth. It's a really friendly Fringe. Fringing is fun. People talk to each other. People consult that program. But the nice thing is that you can actually meet that performer when he walks out of the show and talk
Absolutely.
To him about his show. Mm-hmm. Go and have a beer with him in the beer tent.
Well, and the performers are out promoting their shows.
Of course they are.
Handing out postcards and talking up their shows and stuff, trying to get good audiences.
And I think that's the fantastic connection.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a real connection between the artist and the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty rare these days. I mean, it's rare even in sport. People are either behind a helmet or behind a guard or whatever, but not in this case. So the artists become part of the festival atmosphere
Absolutely.
On the street.
Yeah. And they're also going to see each other's shows too, which is kind
they
of fun.
Are. So, I mean, that is part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, we have always said that the performers need to see the other shows because if they can't travel to get new influences, this is the one opportunity that we can give them to see what else is cutting edge from around the world and around the U.S. and Canada.
And obviously you have a lot of Indianapolis-based performers or Indiana-based, but you also have performers from all over the country, even all over the world.
We do, and this year I'm particularly pleased that Luz Sands, who's mm-hmm. one of our Australian performers who's been here three times,
okay.
is bringing two other Aussie performers with her, and they're both award-winning fringe performers.
That's great.
Because, you know, we have a
huge... So you'll feel right at home.
I'm going to be so happy... I'll be the only one that really understands what they're saying. But they are bringing some quality shows, and I think that's fun. I mm-hmm. think the audience will like that. But they're coming from, you know, past performers are coming back. Mm-hmm. Some of them got their start at the Fringe. I mean, Blunder Construction.
Yeah.
He had never been on stage before he did the Fringe Festival, I think, in 2006 or 7.
And he's just got such a great, funny show.
Oh, wonderful show. But he's also now world famous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has a following from around the world. Who would ever have thought the man in the overalls wearing a hard hat and rolling an orange ball down the street
yeah.
would become one of the best known performers in North America, really?
That's really cool. That's really cool.
It is cool. You know, love it.
And I mean, so many, you know, different organizations participate and help. I know that, you know, I mean, it's not just... groups that are putting together just a show for Fringe, but groups that perform throughout the year, like Modus Dance, and that they're doing a piece. And so it's a really neat sort of bringing together of a lot of different styles, a lot of different abilities, actors, some who are professionals, some who are just getting their start, some who are trying out a show, you know, for the first time, and some who've really been, you know, working at other Fringe festivals as well.
Well, I think Fringe allows people to fail.
Mm-hmm.
But not fail financially, because we have the umbrella and we provide the best tools for them. They can really concentrate on their show and concentrate on their marketing. So it gives them an opportunity that they would never get anywhere else in the city, to try something new, to be creative, mm-hmm. to be brave.
And the artists get all the proceeds from the ticket sales.
Well, this year we have a small change
okay.
in that. We have... Indie Fringe has dropped the backer button.
Oh, because you've done that in the past where people would then buy a button which would support the Fringe and then
exactly.
could buy their tickets. Okay, so what's the new deal?
So the new deal is this. We have a flat ticket fee of mm-hmm. which Indie Fringe gets $3
okay.
and the performers get a 20% increase. So they receive $12 a ticket.
Okay, so the tickets are $15 for adults.
$15 for adults, okay. $12 for students and seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And then $5 for children.
Okay, very good. Very good. Okay, well, that'll make it a little bit easier, I know.
Well,
for
as
some
you
people.
Know, it's a difficult financial model to give mm-hmm. away 100% of the box office
yeah.
because over the last 9 years, that has actually added up to $850,000.
Wow.
That we have returned through
that
the box office.
These performers have been getting. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's a lot of money to
sure.
generate. There had to become a point where Indie Fringe had to be self-sustaining as well.
Mm-hmm.
And button sales were going down because more people saw shows, which is wonderful,
mm-hmm.
but not for Indie Fringe.
Right.
So we're now connected to the ticket price.
Good.
And quite frankly, the performers deserved
and they get a bump
an increase.
That's great for them too.
Yeah, great for them. Great for all of us.
Now, of course, the easiest way to figure out what Fringe you want to go to, because there are so many shows, is the schedule that was published in the Indianapolis Star and is also available all around the Fringe locations. And
correct. We have 10,000 extra programs. So
that
if
should
you
be
didn't
enough.
Get one,
okay.
just give us a call and we'll make sure we either post you a program, or you can, or tell you where you can pick it up.
Now, Fringe starts on August 14th, goes through the 24th. Where are the eight stages?
So we have two at Theatre on the Square, two at the Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
Comedy Sports, Indie Fringe, the Cook Theatre at Indiana Landmarks,
mm-hmm.
and we have a temporary theatre, but it will be very smart, at the 800 block on
right.
Mass Avenue.
You mentioned that a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm.
And for those who
in the Trailside building.
In the Trailside building. It's next door to Yat's and across the road from the wine shop and our bistro.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a pretty
and
nice.
And just down the street from Indie Reads Books.
And down the street from Indie Reads Books.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great little area up there that is, you know, going to be a fun position
good.
For the 8th Theatre.
Okay, very good. And the theaters don't really have a theme. It's not like one is all children or one is all magic.
No, actually, the way the theaters are allocated is purely by technical needs.
Yeah.
Some people need a dance theater, so typically dance goes to Theater on the Square main stage because they have a Marley floor.
Sure.
Some need projections, so up at the Cook, they have a very nice projection. Mm-hmm. Opportunity. Some need, you know, other storytelling, for instance, has traditionally been in the Katrina and Frank Basile Theatre in the basement of the Phoenix. So that stays there. So there's, you know, reasons. Small plays work really well in TOTS too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you wouldn't expect them to have a large audience. So they're happy to have a 65-seat theatre where they can really connect with the audience.
And at each theatre, people can buy tickets right there, but they can also buy them in advance as well.
We are selling 100% online this year. Mm-hmm. So if somebody fears that they might miss out on one of those blockbuster shows, you can now
buy their ticket early and
in advance, have your ticket in your hand, no longer lining up on the queues. But the tickets that are not sold will still be available at the door half an hour before the show commences.
Okay. Very good. Very good. And then you also have a lot of stuff that's going on beyond just the shows at the Fringe. I mean, you've got your street performances, you've got a beer tent, you've got a whole bunch of other fun things going on.
We do. There's so much happening. Well, you know, the street has a great festival atmosphere. And it's very nice to have a place where people can connect, which is at the beer tent. And that's sponsored by our local brewery, Flat 12.
Mm-hmm.
And we all love a cold beer on a hot day.
Absolutely.
And that's a place where people can swap ideas, talk about the shows they've seen, meet and discuss shows with the performers. We have music. We have improv. We've included a lot of things on the stage there for people who might just see one or two shows and want to relax.
Sure.
And decide, well, you know, what will I see tomorrow or next weekend? So there's a little place for them to gather and really just work together as a community, chatting about what's hot.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, so, Pauline, I want to ask you about some big news that you've been wanting to share.
Well, I think people have probably heard us talking about the Trail Side, which is the extension to the Indie Fringe Basile Theatre. We are at capacity in that theater.
In that theater, I mean, at one point it was a church. It's a small theater space that you've developed. It's sort of right there on the corner where College meets Mass Ave.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And we developed that as a year-round theater because one of the things that the performers didn't have was anywhere to rehearse or put their shows on. Well, it's become so popular and we have completely run out of space.
Yeah.
So we looked at creating a new venue, which would be a community space, provide public toilets, strangely enough, for the cultural trail.
Right.
Because if you've ever ridden it, you'll know there are many on the cultural trail. So public restrooms, box office, foyer, and a lift for ADA accessibility into the main theatre, which I think is very important. Green room that connects the old theatre with the new theatre.
Okay.
Which will be a small black box, only 65 seats. It will be an experimental theatre, tiered seating.
Oh, great.
But it will have this amazing operable wall, a big hangar wall that will enable us to do indoor-outdoor shows.
Oh, very cool.
And we're very excited about that. So we've been working on that capital campaign for 5 years. Well, as I take a deep breath,
yes.
I'm happy to say that although that campaign will never be finished, we will have enough money to break ground. And in 2015, in our 11th year, we will have the Indie Fringe, Indie 11, as in soccer,
yes.
Theatre.
That is so cool. So the soccer team is partnering with you and sponsoring
the
this.
The soccer team
that
is
awesome.
Partnering. Ursel Ozdemir, who owns Indie 11, likes the idea that art, sport and business will partner together to bring this community space to life.
That is so fantastic.
Where the cultural trail meets, where the arts people meet, and where really Indie 11 has claimed Mass Avenue as their home.
Yeah.
They had, you know, an
amazing big event there during World Cup. And,
yep, party for 8,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So we're delighted to have this
partnership.
That's so cool. And I think that it will grow audiences on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
It will bring young families to us and will bring an edgy side to the soccer.
Mm-hmm.
After all, soccer has been on the fringe of sport for many years. So that's our news. And
congratulations.
We're very, very excited about it. The performers are going to love this new little theatre.
That's really great news. And what a cool thing to be able to announce right now as you're going into the 10th annual Indie Fringe.
I know, 10
that's
years.
Very exciting.
I have to pinch myself.
Well, congratulations on all this. Looking forward to another great Fringe this year. And thank you so much for the work that you do with it.
Well, thank you very much for supporting Indie Fringe for all these years and to all the listeners who have supported the Fringe and embraced everything that it means to Indianapolis and to the performers in particular. Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with Indie Fringe director Pauline Moffat. You can get more information and a complete schedule of Fringe performances at indiefringe.org. And that's IndyFringe.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Arts organization has just finished a gala 50th anniversary season. What's next? That's the question Sharon Gamble asked of James Kramer and Josh Lingenfelter of Clues Memorial Hall.
Okay, so this is the 51st season.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Congratulations. You lived through the big 50th anniversary celebration.
We made it.
But
Yay.
At some point, I'm sure early on in the 50th anniversary season, you were like, oh my gosh, we still have to keep going. Because a lot of the artists that you work with are booked way out.
Mm-hmm. There was a point, actually, whenever somebody had contacted us and asked us about what we were planning for the 75th. I was we're just still trying to get through the 50th.
Come on. How would you know what artists are still going to be touring?
Some of them we probably could book. They do book that far out. 25 years from now.
Mick Jagger.
He's going to be around.
So I love, again, as always, the great variety from Air Supply to, I have to ask about, though, early in the season in November, what is this Tarantino in concert?
If you could imagine there being a Broadway musical that was based off of Tarantino movies, that's essentially what this is. It's because it takes the popular songs that Quentin Tarantino is kind of known for, certain movies and very iconic scenes where he plays the music somewhat, I guess, if we use the phrase, like, against type. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't expect that that's the music that's going to play in it, but suddenly that becomes the iconic scene.
Yeah, so there's something really violent, and it's a pop tune from the 50s.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what they did was the company, for the record, actually took all of these sort of, you know, well-known scenes from all of Quentin Tarantino's movies. And then they have a full band. They do it all in costume, and they recreate the scenes and perform the music live as though it was a Broadway show.
That is so weird and so cool.
Mm-hmm. It's very different, that's for sure.
How'd you become aware of that?
You know, we go to certain conventions and stuff where they kind of tell you, like, here's the new ideas that we have coming out. Here's the things that we're thinking about doing. And sometimes you walk by and they'll have the things that they really, really want to push for you, which will be, you know, the very well-known artists. And I'll tend to walk by and see in the corner of their poster some little tiny logo for something like Tarantino in concert and go, wait, now what's that?
Yeah.
And then, you know, if it makes you intrigued, especially as somebody who sees, when you work at Clues, you see so many shows that over time, not that things become stagnant, but that you start to look for, well, what's new and different? Because you know a lot of these artists, you've seen them, you've had them perform on the stage before. That you sometimes go and seek out, well, what's the thing that's different?
Right.
That we haven't seen before. And this was one we hadn't really seen before.
And it's nice to have something that makes people go, wait, what? Mm-hmm. I mean, because, you know, Roseanne Cash, Jay Leno, known brands, known names, don't really have to, Air Supply, don't really have to explain who these folks are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But Tarantino in concert, love that. Ragamala Dance?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of in that same category of the maybe not a household name.
Yeah. Well, it's a classical Indian dance
company. I'm looking at James because he's a dancer.
Yes.
No offense, Josh.
We both have our our passions, if you will. And Ragamala Dance is just a company that we think it's time to present in Indianapolis. We talked about it, and we were looking at some tried and true, some that we'd presented before. We said, let's do something that we've not presented, and let's do a genre that we're not really seeing a lot of in the community. There's a fine school up in Zionsville that's run by Dr. Sen. And so there are some elements of classical Indian dance in the community.
Mm-hmm.
This is not Bollywood dance. It is a classical Indian dance form. And we're going to be having some outreach conversations about that leading up to it through the fall and into January, a conversation with David Hochul.
Yeah, you're doing one of your clues. I'm so delighted that, and we'll come back to this, Clues mm-hmm. Conversations continues.
But I think that will help a lot of folks who aren't sure what to look for or what this is about to come and learn before you even come to the show.
And the music that these folks dance to mm-hmm. is?
It's traditional music, but this is going to be Song of Jasmine's a new work for them. They've just premiered it, and there's going to be a jazz saxophone involved in it. So it's going to be very interesting to hear jazz saxophone incorporated into classical Indian music all live on stage. I'm a little looking forward to it.
I see a lot of educational outreach around that in particular.
Yes, indeed.
Well, and
yes,
somewhat
indeed.
Of a rarity, to be honest, because in most cases when you do have dance companies that come in, it's very rarely that you have live accompaniment.
Mm-hmm.
It's often
That's true. It's expensive.
It's often recorded.
Yeah.
So this is a very unique opportunity, not only to see classical Indian dance, but to have live accompaniment mm-hmm. with dance as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah. So that also creates a little bit different scenario around, lots of times your sound engineers would have a different challenge if they're mm-hmm. doing recorded
mm-hmm.
music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And through the whole rehearsal process and things, certainly the engagement of the dancers. And I think, having, as you said, performing to live music is such a different sensation for the performers. So, and for the audience to experience that with live rather than recorded, it is just a wonderful, wonderful way to see movement, to have that live movement.
And it's part of why people still come out for mm-hmm. live performances, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. it's different every night.
Yes.
Every performance. And something might go wrong. Mm-hmm. They're mm-hmm. performing without a net, so mm-hmm. to speak. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Speaking of jazz, let's talk mm-hmm. about, not everybody may know the Marcus Roberts Trio.
Well, the Marcus Roberts Trio, one of the names, they may not know the name Marcus Roberts. They may know one of the names as part of the trio because the drummer for the Marcus Roberts Trio is Jason Marsalis of the Marsalis family,
sure.
who we had the entire family for the 50th anniversary,
right.
which was the entire music playing.
No pressure, George, but you're going to have to learn an instrument by next year.
It's the Clues 50th. You're going to have to learn. We had a great time with Jason, and we had actually found out about the trio actually from a CBS Sunday Morning and a 60 Minutes special. We all kind of caught it at different times.
Oh.
We were like, did you see the thing about Marcus Roberts?
Yeah.
And so we had known Marcus Roberts because Marcus used to actually play for Lincoln Center Jazz as a pianist. But we weren't aware about the trio and how much that they were under this sort of guidance of Wynton Marsalis that they were under and how they've sort of taken off on their own now. And Marcus has just a very interesting story. He lost his sight when he was very young, and he taught himself how to play the piano, and then over time started taking lessons, learning more about it, and engaging more. And what I found the most interesting, as James is a dancer and my background is in music, what I found the most interesting
Right, you're a percussionist.
Percussionist, mm-hmm. yeah. And so many times when you're playing within a band setting, there's a lot of things that are based off of visual, off of, cueing each other and looking to
You're
each
right.
other to know where you are within the music. And this trio doesn't have that benefit. So their band leader can't see them. So in turn, they have to play together in a way that is completely musical, of being cued through what they're playing and not by, sort of looking at the other person and giving a head nod of, okay, it's your turn, but instead knowing how each other is going to perform in the song. And they don't take the sort of traditional trio to heart. And a lot of times within a jazz trio, especially if it's, bass, piano, drums, the piano is the instrument and the other stuff is accompaniment.
Right.
It's not the case for them. I mean, you really get the sense of each one being their own part of the trio, and they each get a chance to shine throughout the music. So it's a really cool group that plays a lot of really accessible music,
mm-hmm.
which can sometimes be a concern when it gets into jazz.
Where would you slot them as far as kind of style of jazz?
Well, it's something that you would feel as comfortable in a club as you would at a festival.
Okay.
It's not big band, of course. It's right. not, you know, it's not Benny Goodman or anything like that. It's a little bit more contained, but at the same time, I think that there's some opportunities. Some of the folks actually from around here might remember Dan Tepfer, who played with a trio and actually had played before Joshua Redman a couple years back at Clues, and he was the jazz fellow. Award winner
APA.
From APA. So maybe kind of within that vein, I think,
okay.
for folks who know Dan and Dan's work.
Yeah, makes great sense. I know we can't, sorry, listeners, we don't have time to talk about everything that's going on at Clues, so I'm just kind of hitting some highlights of things that frankly intrigue me, like cats fighting with lightsabers. We got to talk about Lightwire. I'm sorry, that jumped out at me in your season announcement. What is Lightwire?
I've heard it put best if it's George Lucas meets Jim Henson. So it's
okay.
You know, it's Star Wars meets puppetry, if you will. But here's one where James and I can both talk about it because it is a combination truly of dance, but also very high amounts of technology.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the easiest shows for us to present because it's literally we just turn off the lights. We don't, you know, you'd think everybody was supposed to go home. There's no, you know, there's nothing going on, but it's all done completely in the dark, and every single cast member is wearing these suits that have, I guess the best comparison would be sort of like neon tubing on the suits, which then turns all of the cast members into massive puppets.
Whoa.
So you're not actually seeing a dancer on stage. You're seeing the dancers make formations of a cat or turtles or explosions or fight sequences. I mean, things that look like they could come out of science fiction movies or things that are just telling very traditional folk tales. I know they had an education program they did mm-hmm. for quite some time that was about the ugly duckling
mm-hmm.
and just telling that story through the light and through movement.
Is there dialogue or music, or is it
there is music.
Movement exclusively?
There is music, but it's okay. movement and music. Mm-hmm. So has more of a feel of a dance performance, mm-hmm. but really family friendly because it's not over your head. It's not, you know, dialogue telling some, you know, big long story that people can't understand. It's all just done through visual.
Mm-hmm. And they're classically trained dancers, which is an interesting twist on this.
Wow.
And hearing them talk about it, it's something that's very challenging because the director or one of the co-directors of this is Ian Carney, who was with Boston Ballet.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he sets and works with the dancers in the studio is from a classical approach, a classical foundation. And then to take them and put them into the costumes and then have that challenge of, well, can you do what we just set in the costumes that you have to work with? So that's a bit of a challenge for them in a different way. And some people may remember Eleanor Bernard was here with the Indianapolis Ballet Theater years mm-hmm. ago, and she and Ian are married. So
okay.
they're going to both be back here, and it's just going to be a great kind of a homecoming reunion of sorts to have her back. And
that reinforces a message that seems to come up a lot in our arts community, and that is if you're a university-aged person or a high school-aged person, study the classics. You'll never go wrong having a classical foundation, whatever your
mm-hmm,
art form,
mm-hmm.
whether it's literature, visual arts, dance, music. You may depart wildly
mm-hmm.
from it in the
mm-hmm.
future, but mm-hmm. That discipline is always good for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that I would necessarily put Jackie Parker, John Kimura Parker, and Stuart Copeland together at a cocktail party.
Hmm.
But they are, in fact, together on your stage this coming year.
I think that's what makes it a cool show.
Sure.
You know, that's the idea of putting those two folks together, especially when we sort of started reading more and talking to them more about what ultimately they were going to do, which is, and the show's called Off the Score. It then started to make sense. And it's also sort of a lesson of what you were just talking about understanding the classics and how those work and having those be part of your training. This is where they're taking classical music and then working improvisation into it. And so you have Stuart Copeland, whose background, he is classically trained as a percussionist,
mm-hmm.
But also is probably most well known as being the drummer for the rock band The Police. He's essentially integrating his own musical ideas into these classical pieces that John has done arrangements of, as well as some of Stewart's own pieces, but then taking an opportunity in those pieces to go off the score, to just sort of go off the music, and much like you would do in jazz and say, you know, we're gonna do the head, and then we're going to go to the A section, and then we're going to solo on the B section. They're going to do the same thing, but it would be with Rite of Spring. And you go, I don't know how that's even possible. But they've I don't know if they know if it's even possible, but that's what we'll see. So it goes back to the idea of on stage that night, what you will see, you won't see again. It's going to be, you'll get that experience of hearing that music for a little bit, and then you're going to hear some improvisation around it that I think is going to be really unique, of course, but you know, could be very engaging and very exciting.
Sharon Gamble with James Kramer and Josh Lingenfelter of Clues Memorial Hall. Learn more about their performances, art gallery, Clues conversations, and much, much more at clueshall.org. That's C-L-O-W-E-S hall.org.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
We have to be really fast on our calendar this week, so let's tell them just a very few things they can do on that calendar we call. What do we do?
Well, you know, it is the State Fair going on right now, yeah. And one thing you can do at the State Fair that's arts-related is to check out some really cool paintings that Nancy Noel has done of mainly cows and a few little lambs and some chickens and some horses and such. Nancy Noel, just a great painter. And does some beautiful work, and she is having a lot of her work of livestock on display at the State Fair. Enjoy.
And you can take these home.
You could.
Indeed.
If you can't take home a cow,
you don't have to feed them
a cow.
When you get them there. Hey, speaking of dining, oh, what a great segue. At Congregation Beth El Zedek this weekend, there is an event called Table Settings 2014. More than 35 area designers, florists, decorators, and retailers are going to whet your appetite and inspire you with their unique, beautiful displays of china, glassware, silver, linens, and floral arrangements. So if maybe you're planning a wedding or thinking about some other significant party and you'd like to have some inspiration or get some help, think about going to Table Settings 2014 at Congregation Beth El Zedek, 600 West 70th Street.
Well, I must be on an animal kick because this really appealed to me. Out at the IMA, Indianapolis Museum of Art, they are doing a hummingbird banding and catch and release on Saturday, August 16th from 8:30 to 11:30 a.m. It's free. It's in the garden. And what they're going to be doing out there is they're actually going to be catching and banding and releasing hummingbirds. I don't know how you catch a hummingbird, but there'll be 3 45-minute catch and release sessions starting at 8:30, and that just sounds kind of fun.
It sounds adorable.
Yeah.
You have to be really fast.
You have to be really
fast
to catch
a
hummingbird.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, at Gallery 2 right now, there are 20 recent works in oil celebrating summer in Indiana by Addie Hertschen. More information about that at gallery-2.com, gallery-2.com. Hey, Cecina High School graduate and Oberlin Conservatory student Amelia Keenan will be performing a vocal concert at Downey Avenue Christian Church this Saturday at 3 o'clock. And not only is that fun because you get to hear a talented young lady doing some selections from Great American Songbook and some light classical work as well, but also proceeds benefit the Bonna Thompson Library, which is a part of the old Butler campus. Downey Avenue Christian Church is at 111 South Downey in Indianapolis.
Very cool. Hey, Dance Kaleidoscope has their Cole concert this weekend, celebrating the music of Cole Porter on Saturday the 9th at 8 p.m. and Sunday the 10th at 2:30, and that is out at the Tarkington at the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel. You know what? Last thing, Sharon, since you got me thinking about food, not with the hummingbirds, but just with the other things. Greek Fest 2014, 41st Annual Greek Fest is coming up on August 22nd through the 24th. Should be a lot of fun. And we'll have more things to talk about food and art related,
indeed,
I'm sure, next week on that calendar we call.
What do we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana.
Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Painter Phil O'Malley is working on an interesting project, an oil painting 40 feet tall by 20 feet wide that's titled Finding Your Way from Wander to Wonder, which will be on display for the next 2 years at Clues Memorial Hall. And how is he making this happen? With lots of sponsorships of $12.50 per square foot. Travis DiNicola talked with O'Malley to find out more.
Phil, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Great to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you.
And congratulations on completing this incredibly large painting. As you walked in the studio today, you just told me that you just hung it at Clues. It sounds like that had to be quite the task. This is obviously the biggest painting you've ever done.
Yeah, it is. And one, it's a painting. It's not a mural.
I've done
several murals in the past. But there's a difference.
This is a painting on canvas that Clues has essentially commissioned, asked you to do. Tell me how this whole
process...
Actually,
they didn't commission the painting.
Okay. How did this all happen to have this painting at Clues?
During their 50th anniversary, which was last year, they had a call to artists for submitting paintings relative to the theme for their 50th anniversary. And the paintings were to be 4 feet by 4 feet, and they'd have 50 of them that would go on a mosaic wall that was 20 feet wide.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. It was a really cool piece.
5 by 10 high, 40 high. And then it was received so well by the public and the visitors, they wanted to continue using that space as exhibit space because, you know, art at Clues is amazing gallery space. It's 4 stories of gallery space with wonderful vistas. And they met with various artists.
Okay.
And one of which being me. I was kind of overwhelmed with all the work that I already had to do. But when they decided they wanted me to do the project after I presented my ideas, after talking to different artists, I couldn't turn it down. It was kind of when I was looking up at that wall, it was looking back down at me as if to say, I dare you. And it was one of those things of come big or stay at home. Instead of doing a bunch of paintings as a collage and hanging them up just as an exhibit, I proposed that we build a trellis that was 20 feet wide by 40 feet tall as if it were the stretcher for a canvas. And I would make a painting that we would stretch
one
around that whole
piece
thing.
Of
and
canvas.
We found the canvas that's 24 feet wide. And Clues went ahead and bought enough for three projects, one including the first one, mine. They have more on hand. And it's an exhibit opportunity because Art at Clues, their gallery space, is exhibit space.
Right.
It was presented initially that this be perhaps it needed to be because of the scale and the rest of it, a commission piece. And that would have to have a high commission to get an artist, a well-known artist from New York or L.A. And the reply from several people on the committee was, we do have artists here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's when they were talking to various artists. And when they asked me to do it, then I found out, okay, I was going to perhaps build walls in my studio, two walls, maybe 10 feet long and 10 feet high each on wheels I'd put together, and I'd do the painting 10 feet at a time and just keep rolling it over.
Yeah.
And then James had the idea, well, the orchestra pit is 16 feet
deep. This is James from Clues Hall.
James Kramer, the manager of public relations, and he's in charge of the Art at Clues project. He said, you know, instead of doing the 10-foot walls, how about we use the orchestra pit, and then since it's 16 feet, we can just lower it down, and you can do 16 feet, and then we'll lower it down and do some more, or roll it up. And then the stage crew said...
So you made Clues your studio?
Well, Clues gave me their stage as the studio.
Wow,
they decided that I would use their 4-story backdrop wall. Actually, it's 5-story wall, And they would fly it in, as they call it.
Yeah.
And then what we did was tie webbing, sew webbing onto, it was a Sunday afternoon, we were there sewing webbing on the top of this canvas after we had the whole thing primed and ready to go. It took 25 gallons of acrylic polymer priming, five coats over this whole piece, and we stapled it right on stage with plastic underneath, primed it, and then pulled all the staples and sewed the webbing, and then tied put grommets in and tied the ties on to a batten. And what we would do is tie it to the batten and fly the 20 by 40 piece of canvas as a painting out. And they raised it on up in front of this wall. And then I would go up and down a lift in ladders, spraying paint, squirting paint.
So help me understand. Could you see the whole canvas at one time?
I could see the whole canvas at one time. I had the full stage between shows because, remember, they did have shows. They had Daphne and Chloe and all these other things going on at graduation. So what we would do in that respect is when I wasn't working on the ground or on the stage, when I was working on the stage, would tie to the bat and fly it on out. And it's hanging up there in the space. And then after the production was over, after 4 or 5 days, they'd fly it on down. Mm-hmm. Even on one particular case, they only needed to use a certain front portion for a graduation of the stage. So all they did was pull the curtains, and we moved the paint for the back, and off we went with that one. And I had about a month and a half to pull this off. So it was everything had to be dropped and do that. But this whole process was also kind of like listening to your four favorite songs at the same time because in April I had a big commission from a private company that had to be done in 3 weeks, but simultaneously getting ready for an exhibit in Broad Ripple and the exhibit for Spotlight at Clues.
Sure.
And I was asked to do a solo show at Heron in September. And then when Clues decided they wanted me to do this piece, it was like these wonderful four things. It was very similar to these wonderful four things happening, but since they're happening all at the same time and you're
It's been a busy summer for you.
Well, yeah, but it was one of those things that all four songs are playing at once. Yeah. You really couldn't separate them and enjoy it.
Let me ask you a couple of specific questions here. First off, I just got to know, where do you find a canvas this large?
Did some research. But remember, Clues is for the performing arts. Mm-hmm. So backdrops and the rest of it. And when I was in work study at Bloomington back in the 80s, one of my work study jobs, aside from being a gallery manager at Campus Community Arts Center, I did backdrops at the MAC. So, which was a most wonderful job. So I kind of learned that whole process.
Yeah.
And I knew they existed. And so did John Lucas, who's the chief electrician there. He knew of a place where to retrieve that.
Okay. So let me ask you this as well then. You said that, you know, so Clues bought the canvas, but right now you're doing a campaign through the Power to Give.
Yes.
And my understanding is it's $12.50 to essentially sponsor a square foot.
Yes.
How does that all work?
Well, it's actually working quite well in that Clues decided that, and they invested about $20,000 in putting the scaffold or the putting the trellis up on the wall. And actually, it was really cool because they decided to use, really recycled the old sound shell from that was there in the 60s. The wood was in the basement, and they used that. But then to build that whole thing, engineer it and all that stuff. And then they decided to, since it was an exhibit opportunity, so instead of the artist getting paid for the art to get made, this was just like the rest of the gallery space, an exhibit opportunity, and they take a commission of 20% for all artists. And in order to help the artists create the work, they would offer all that they could, one being studio space, the stage,
of course,
and an amazing access to staff. You're just so unbelievably helpful. And the Power to Give, being a not-for-profit, going through the Arts Council, we decided since there are 800 square feet and the amount that they were allotting for help the artist and the project go forward being 10,000, that 800 square feet worked out to $12.50 a square foot. Yeah. So even if just two people who could afford $6.25 wanted to chip in,
yeah.
they could be a part of funding
this art project.
And it really is amazing how so many people feel empowered that they can go give 1 square foot
Absolutely.
Or 100 square feet.
Yeah.
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 Right now, after 2 weeks, we're already up to 45% funding.
That's wonderful. Congratulations on that. Now, do people actually get to pick their square foot, or is it just more of a general idea of a square foot?
It's a general idea of a square
foot. And that's certainly
they're helping to fund the project.
That's really, really cool, though. Yeah. So let's talk about the painting itself. You've shown me some beautiful images. As we said, it was just hung today while we're recording this on Monday at Clues, so people will be able to see it very soon, which is great.
The unveiling is on the 17th of August, and there's an invitation for that. And then, of course, WFYI is going to be doing a documentary.
Yeah, very cool. So tell me about the painting. What's it look like?
Well, the subject matter, the theme, there's a series I have called, I've been working on for a few years now, and it's called the Deep Down series. And it's about that they're abstract visual representations of that human experience that, you know, when you're looking for courage or strength to either change something or overcome something or accomplish something, and you have to go deep down inside. It's an individual experience that can be kind of frightening. But when you do it, it's amazing how beautiful what can come out of it. And so the painting visually is about all this convoluted just kind of energy and chaos. And
there's a lot of,
muck,
like, sort
lots of
color
muck
and crazy stuff going on at the bottom.
At the
and then as you find a path,
and there are loads of pathways to find yourself out of all this muck. And what's really wonderful about the whole thing is the bottom of the painting hangs at 6 feet. So you're seeing all this muck. And as you move through the painting, you find your way on up through it. And as you graduate up through the different levels, to the first mezzanine, second, and third, it's a completely different perspective.
Yeah, I've seen it from different angles and different
locations. And when I designed the thing, I was thinking, okay, do I want the painting to ascend or descend? And ascend worked so well with the Deep Down series. And then at the same time, when you get up there, I wanted it to comfortably descend. So I guess you have to see it.
How much did you work on the composition on a smaller scale beforehand? Or were you able to do that? Or
I did, in that I knew that I wanted a very heavy bottom quarter. So it is pretty deep, pretty strong in the first 10 feet. But remember, it's 6 feet off the ground. And after looking and studying the 50 paintings for the mosaic wall, the anniversary wall, and seeing just how much the viewer could see from that level, I realized that their perspective was kind of limited to detail within that first 10 feet, which made 16 feet being the limit. And then it had to just become very light and airy and open and work its way on up. And it does. Also, too, knowing that it was going to be such a predicament stretching that canvas to get it tight enough so that it didn't
and it's
like
actually stapled
sail.
Onto the wall.
It's only – no, they built a trellis
on
the wall.
Onto a trellis on the wall.
The trellis is about 3/4 of an inch raised from the wall.
Okay.
So that this painting is stapled on the sides like a gallery wrap, and then it's trimmed so there's 4 or 5 inches all the way around. So when it sells, somebody can transfer it and rewrap it someplace. But then it's rolled and tucked behind this trellis. And ingenious engineering. These guys at Clues just, it's not their first.
So the whole thing, 200 pounds, right? Is that what the canvas weighs?
The canvas, one solid sheet of canvas, and I think the canvas was in the vicinity of 50, 60 pounds, just the canvas itself.
And of course,
but then
the
by
paint.
The time we put 25 gallons of acrylic primer on the thing, you know, we've already added another, what, 40 pounds per five, so there's close to 100 pounds right when it by the time the water evaporates and then the paint itself.
The paint itself. That's
and,
so cool.
Oh, it is, but it's just really amazing, the whole operation of how from start to finish they were so helpful.
And you're actually doing an exhibit about the process, right?
Yes.
Heron, tell me a bit about this.
Well, when Paula Katz from Heron scheduled me, asked me to do a solo show at Heron in the first part of the year. She wanted me to have the September slot because there were the faculty show is coming down the same night my show starts, plus mm-hmm. another show in conjunction with that. And then when Clues asked me, I thought, how am I going to put together both these projects? Mm-hmm. So I approached Paula and Valerie Eichmeier, because mm-hmm. she came mm-hmm. to the studio to visit, and everybody's been over to the studio sometime. And she decided that we would, I could make the show about the making of this piece.
That's really cool.
So I'm including the Deep Down series in the show and about the making of this piece.
And when does that show open at Heron?
It is August the 29th, mm-hmm. and it'll run till September the 19th.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
What a phenomenal project to be working on and be a part of. And sounds like you had some great people to help you out with it as
well. Yeah, really. It never would have been able to pull it off without them.
Well, Phil, I just can't wait to see it in person. That's going to be really fun.
Yes.
What a huge, huge, huge painting, huge opportunity.
You'll be able to see it on Sky Blue.
Oh, good. Very good. They'll be doing that as well. Phil O'Malley, thank you so much for coming to Art of the Matter and talking about this work.
You are welcome. Thanks for having me.
Travis DiNicola with artist Phil O'Malley. His four-story painting will be on display at Clues Memorial Hall for the next 2 years. You can get more information and sponsor a square foot of the work at the Power to Give website. Just go to power2give.org, powertogive.org. Find the Indianapolis page and search for either Clues or Art on Stage. Clues or Art on Stage.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll get a preview of this year's Start with Art Luncheon.
And I'll talk with magician Kayla Drescher about her return to the Indie Fringe.
And I'll find out from storyteller Sam Simon about his first Indie Fringe show. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.